talk to you today about Vidalia beetle, Rhodiola cardinalis. And most of you know this one really well because it's sort of parented the biological control program in University of California, certainly, as well as nationwide. The pest cottony cushion scale arrived in the late 1800s, and Vidalia beetle was brought in, and it did a very fine job of controlling this pest and saving the citrus industry in California. I work in the central San Joaquin Valley, shown in the center of the California photograph there. And so most of the comments I make today about citrus will be with respect to that particular region. Cottony cushion scale damage has two problems. One is they produce a huge amount of honeydew, which creates sooty mold, which then rains down onto the fruit. That can be washed off in harvest. The most serious aspect of cottony cushion scale is that when the densities are high, the trees actually stop producing very much fruit, and so it has a direct impact on yield. So that's why the cottony cushion scale, or the Vidalia beetle, has been so important in reducing those pest populations. Now, in the San Joaquin Valley of California, for decades, the conventional program for controlling all of the major pests, which include various lepidopteran, citrus thrips, red scale, were organophosphates and carbamates for many, many years, 40 plus years. And gradually, the two key pests, thrips and scale, red scale, developed resistance to those particular products, and that's shown in red. And so in the recent period of time, since the early 90s, a whole slew of new insecticides have become registered in an attempt to replace those organophosphates and carbamates. For example, for citrus thrips control, there's spinosad known as Success, sabadilla, which is a botanical known as Veratran, abamectin, which is Agrimec. For California red scale, the majority of treatments have shifted over to the chemical pyraproxifen, which is an insect growth regulator. And in addition, we had other situations sort of come about as that organophosphate and carbamate use declined, and it did quite dramatically when we got the pyraproxifen for scale and the spinosad for thrips, over 75% reduction in the amount of pounds used AI in the San Joaquin Valley. Two pests appeared as problems. They went from secondary to primary. The first one is citricola scale. Pesticides weren't needed for it in the past because it was very sensitive to organophosphates and carbamates, and so it was kept under control by the treatments for thrips and red scale. So growers have been gradually reintroducing organophosphates for that particular pest, and also as well as that, to a certain extent, the neonicotinoids, imidacloprid and acetamiprid, also work on citricola scale, and so that they've been introduced for that particular pest. Katie did a similar story, very susceptible to low rates of organophosphates, didn't even exist as a pest, particularly until growers stopped using those compounds. And now grower response to Katie did problems are to introduce low rates of chlorpyrifos or pyrethroids or use difluobenzuron. So we've had this huge shift from an organophosphate carbamate supported system to a whole slew of new insecticides. And one of my jobs was to try and determine, okay, what impact are these particular pesticides going to have on the Vidalia beetle in the citrus system? And just to show you a little bit of details about pesticide use patterns and how big those shifts are, you can see the red and the blue, which are the organophosphates and the carbamates, just really collapsed in the early 2000s. And were replaced primarily with spinosad, which is the green. And then you see an increase in the black bars, which are pyrethroids, and the yellow. And some of the organophosphate and carbamate use started coming back. And my premise is that the katydids, those chemicals were being used for katydid control. And what the growers do is they tank mix the spinosad with these other materials for katydids so that they only have one application cost. So we're seeing an increase in some of the more broad-spectrum pesticides. And for scale, similar kind of pattern. When the pyraproxifen, the most dominant replacement for OPs, came into use in the late 1990s, OP use came down quite dramatically. But in recent years, it's increased again, and I think that's because of the citricola scale problem. Okay, so we ran a series of experiments to look at the effects on adult survival for 72-hour exposure, the progeny they produce, and then taking second instar larval stages and following them through their full development to see what effect pesticides had on these, on Vidalia beetle. And the way we did this was we grew cottony cushion scale and pittosporum, and then we would treat the pittosporum and then provide food during this 72-hour period to the adults and larvae of treated plant material with treated cottony cushion scale, and we also provided some untreated cottony cushion scale. So it was sort of the worst case scenario. What if they were on treated plants and the pest had also been treated with the chemical? Let's look at some of the responses. This is the percentage survival of adults over a 72-hour period, and basically the only chemicals that really cause serious problems with adults are the fairly broad-spectrum pyrethroids and some of the foliar neonicotinoids. Notice that superside, the animal could just walk through superside treatments, which is one of our more toxic organophosphates, and that is just documentation that over 45 years of exposure created quite resistant Vidalia beetles. And so OPs can be used in the citrus system in an IPM sense to reduce another pest that and then allows Vidalia beetle to survive and continue to control cottony cushion scale. So adults are not heavily affected with the exception of pyrethroids, and generally the residues at the top, I have different columns where we took different periods of residuality, so 6 weeks after treatment, 2 months after treatment, run the experiment and see what happens. And you can see that for the most part they survive pretty well after a month or two of the residues breaking down. Here's the number of progeny per female over a 72-hour exposure to these chemicals. I would say most chemicals cause some reduction in the amount of eggs laid or eggs that hatch, but the two groups of chemicals that caused the most problem were the piriproxifen or esteem, which the effect lasted pretty significantly over a 4-month period, and the pyrethroids, which lasted over 5 months in terms of reducing progeny. So we've not only are killing some of the adults, we're definitely, with these new chemical groups, some of them significantly reducing the amount of progeny that develop from the eggs. Okay, now let's look at larvae, which are put on pesticide residues and then followed through their entire lifespan. The green lines are cyfluthrin and fempropithrin, which are both pyrethroids, and you notice they get a very quick kill within a day after the animals are placed on there. There's very high mortality. Then the next group of bars, the blue ones, acetamiprid and imidacloprid, are neonicotinoids. It takes a little longer. They're just a little slower acting. It takes more like a week to kill the larvae. Then we move on to spinosad, which was relatively harmless to the animal, and abamectin. And then the final one on this graph is piriproxifen, which is the insect growth regulator. It is a juvenile hormone mimic, and so it does not really affect the animals until they try and pupate, and then it just nails them. Here's a similar experiment with piriproxifen included in here as sort of a standard. You can see that, again, the imidacloprid and thiamethoxam are neonicotinoids. Even as a drench, something applied to the soil that never touched the leaves or the prey, it's taken up into the plant, taken up into the prey, and when fed to these larvae, caused very high mortality. So we need to be careful with some of these neonicotinoids that we claim they're selective by their nature of being applied as a systemic. They're really not. The animal is, Vidalia larvae are getting toxic quantities of them through feeding on poisoned prey. So the imidacloprid was much more strong in its effect than the thiamethoxam, and then we have bupropion, which is a chitin synthesis inhibitor, and it didn't affect them until they tried to molt, and then again there was very high mortality and virtually no mortality from the methidothione, the organophosphate. And then if we look over periods of time, how long does this effect last? Well, abamectin and spinosad, their effects are short term, at most less than a month. The neonicotinoids in blue are sort of intermediate. They last for a month or two. But the pyrethroids and the insect growth regulator piroxifen are quite toxic and last for many, many months in terms of the residual effect impact on the larvae. And this is just another experiment with another group of pesticides, but the same point here that we've got sort of grades of mortality where the neonicotinoids break down fairly quickly. The soil applied, that's what the S stands for, the systemic lasts longer than the foliar, but the most toxic chemicals we found in all our tests were the IGR piroxifen, to a lesser extent the buprefezin, and then the pyrethroids were quite toxic. During 1998, as growers shifted from organophosphates to piroxifen for control of California red scale, nearly 50,000 acres of citrus were treated with piroxifen, and Vidalia beetle disappeared for 9 months. I thought I was going to have to go back to Australia and go find it again and bring it back over because it just vanished valley-wide. And we had enormous cotton and cushion scale outbreaks. And talking to old-timers, this similar situation happened in the 1970s when Carzol, a carbamate, was introduced. So severe disruption. Vidalia beetle did come in the next year, and it grew to enormous numbers. And the picture on your right is Vidalia pupae encrusting a Satsuma mandarin trunk. So it shows that they have an incredible power of increase, and they did come back really well. So what I've done from a management standpoint is talk to growers about how cotton and cushion scale stages coalesce in the spring during April, May, into thirds and adults. And those are the targets for Vidalia beetle. And Vidalia beetle populations increase tremendously during that period of time. And that is about the only time they are going to have an act in citrus in the San Joaquin Valley, because as soon as we get our high temperatures in June, they stop reproducing, they stop growing, they just don't do well, and often they have a lack of prey at that time. So growers need to protect this little unit in time. So if we look at this in the context of citrus pest management, we have these key pests at the beginning of the season, thrips and katydid, that are attacking the very young fruit in April, May, and we have Vidalia beetle activity at that very same time. Growers need to be cognizant that if they have cotton and cushion scale, they need to protect the Vidalia beetle. There are soft chemicals, spinosad, abamectin, and sabadilla for the thrips, but not really for the katydid. And so what we've trained them to do with the katydids is try and reduce rates and use extremely low rates. And I think that combination of that with outside coverage for katydids helps to protect the Vidalia beetle. And then for California red scale, they prefer the piroxifen because it's the most effective chemical against California red scale. We've trained them to delay their use of that chemical until the Vidalia activity is over and done with so that they can protect Vidalia beetles. Where we get into trouble is when we have exotic pests come into the situation. For example, glassy wing sharpshooter loves to use citrus as a host, and then it moves into grapes and moves Pierce's disease around in the grapes. So the growers are required to treat for glassy wing sharpshooter if it's above a certain threshold. Well, those chemicals are neonicotinoids that work the best on glassy wing sharpshooter. And so then we get into the, you know, we're hitting times when Vidalia may be active. And so I just wanted to bring that up as a constraint for all this work we do with IPM. Every time we get an exotic pest, we just really wrestle to get everything back under control. I did a brief survey of recent literature on coccinellids and their testing with various pesticides to see if people agreed or disagreed with me based on my Vidalia experience, and I would say no. In general, there's a lot of agreement in the literature that organophosphates and carbamates and pyrethroids are broad spectrum and kill these beetles, and some have developed some levels of resistance and some are more tolerant than others, but they're pretty broad spectrum. And most people agreed that the neonicotinoids and the insect growth regulators are quite toxic to this particular group of beneficials. And that the other chemicals that I put under the low to moderate toxicity category have much more potential for integrated association with these predatory beetles. So a lot of these chemicals, especially the IGRs and the neonicotinoids and some others, are being registered with reduced risk status, but I think that's based primarily on mammalian low toxicity to mammals and is not taking into consideration the IPM aspect of reduced risk. So, reduced risk and OP replacement insecticides are not necessarily compatible with coccinellates. For Rhodiola cardinalis, the pyrethroids and juvenile hormone mimic piroxicam were most toxic and very persistent. Bioassays need to be conducted on multiple life stages. I've often seen literature where they've only tested the adults, and I think that's the stage that is least impacted by pesticides. And many of the new insecticides don't even affect adult stages. Organophosphates can be highly valuable for IPM because low rates can control secondary pests and allow some coccinella species to survive because they're resistant. And the exotic pests often require broad-spectrum insecticides that disrupt the entire situation and cause us to sort of have to do a restart. So that's my summary analysis of where we stand with insecticides in relation to coccinellates, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions. Thank you. Yes, this data is summarized in a publication, a JEE article, 2006.